Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I've invited author William E. Marks to the program, and he is here to talk to us about his new award-winning book, Water Voices from Around the World. William Marks considers himself a water philosopher. In the early 1970s, as a student at Fairleigh Dickinson University, he researched fish kills and industrial pollution and received the United States Environmental Protection Agency's Citizen Activist of the Year Award. Following college, he traveled Europe and Northwest Africa to study early industrial revolution and old world water management practices. He then served as a senior environmental analyst for the city of Newark in developing programs for stormwater runoff and public water supply. He resigned from Newark to undertake a 7,000-mile horseback journey called Ride for Nature to raise water consciousness, which traversed the United States and forced William to live outside for 2 years. He founded Martha's Vineyard First State Certified Water Testing Laboratory and Vineyard Environmental Research Institute. He has traveled to over 15 countries and has received many environmental awards and is the author or editor of numerous books, magazines, and poems. Most recently, William has been featured in the award-winning documentary Flow for Love of Water, and I am just so happy to have him here on the program to talk with us today. So welcome to Inside Scoop Live, William.
Oh, glad to be a guest, Juanita.
Great. Well, congratulations. This is one beautiful book.
Thank you.
Yeah. So it's an amazing collection of pictures and short passages from some very notable people all over the world. And I understand that you have actually won an award for the book that's most likely to save the planet. Is that right?
Yes, it was a wonderful award to receive, Juanita, at the world's largest book competition. And as the outstanding book of the year, it won first place gold as the book most likely to save the planet. The judges looked at over 3,600 books that were entered and from around the globe, and they felt that water was so important at this time in history, as well as eclipsing the energy crisis and the financial crisis, that is why they awarded this book the first place award as the book most likely to save the planet. I was surprised, as were many other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of makes sense when you think about it that water and conservation and protecting water is probably going to be the focus of this environmental crisis that we are going through. It's all going to boil down to water, basically.
It is, and the underlying cause of our financial stresses at this time all relate to the basic natural resources on which all civilization was constructed, and that is basically water and food. And those things are big challenges these days, getting more expensive each day.
Mm-hmm.
And water is becoming a very scarce and valuable commodity around the globe, so much so that they are now shipping water in huge tankers across the oceans of the earth. So that is how we have evolved at this time in history.
It's really hard to believe that we actually have gotten to that point.
It is, but when you consider there's about 1.5 million people added to the earth each week. And
is that right?
Well, we're heading towards 7 billion people.
Whoa, wow.
And, it's the exponential growth, the Malthusian theory of humankind. And certainly we have outstripped, by the way we live and behave, the natural resources that support us. That is why we have about 12 million people dying each year just from water-related diseases or lack of access to clean water. So already we're seeing a huge toll on civilization, expanding deserts. And we do have our challenges at this time, and that is why this book, Water Voices from Around the World, was created. It took over 5 years. We worked with a lot of talented people, including people from the United Nations, as well as Nobel Peace Prize winners, and shamans from Liberia. We hit a spectrum of people that is unusual for this book, a book of this nature. But we did it to reach out to every class of people on Earth and every belief system on Earth, because again, the underpinnings of civilization and the underpinnings of our daily lives is all based on our relationship with water.
And I understand you actually have touched on 50 different countries through this book as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have over 50 countries represented either through articles, representatives in their letters, or photographs with captions about ecosystems and the different regions of the globe.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did the original idea for this book and this project begin?
The original idea came from a book that I was working on. It was called Water People, whereby I was going to have people write articles. And I was a guest speaker at the United Nations because of a book that I had written earlier called The Holy Order of Water, Healing Earth's Waters and Ourselves. And in the audience was the ambassador from Tajikistan. And his country had just finished sponsoring the International Year of Fresh Water. And Tajikistan, which is in South Central Asia, which controls about 65% of the water in that region of the world, it's a key country for water. He told me that Tajikistan was in process of developing the International Decade of Water and asked me to sit in at a roundtable discussion on that planning session. And I broached my concept of the book Water People, and the ambassador from Tajikistan, Rashid Alimov, said, well, instead of articles, why don't we have letters from people around the globe and very brief articles so that we can include more regions of the planet? So through various discussions, that is how this book was given birth.
And so you actually contacted each one of the contributors to this book and personally asked them to write for it?
Yes, a letter of invitation was sent to these people all around the globe. And the reason why the book took as long as it did, because we had commitments from some of these people, like Jane Goodall or Mikhail Gorbachev. And yet these people, like Jane Goodall, travels about 320 days out of the year. Mm-hmm. So for Jane to take time to write a letter, to supply the bio background, the photographs, et cetera. For each individual, we have 77 of them from around the globe, as well as we have about 40 articles from around the globe. So, it took a lot of time to gather the materials from each person that participated, but it was well worth it because it's the only way this type of book could have come into being.
Yeah, yeah. It is so powerful to hear the words of these very prominent people from across the planet that are basically all saying the same thing about water, you know, and the importance of water, and just to know that that consciousness is alive on the planet and being considered is very powerful.
You know, the basic premise of almost all of their presentations, yes, begins with the scarcity of water, but what is so educational about the book, Juanita, is that then they go on to tell us the story of what is going on with water from their region. So if it's a woman in India explaining to us about the monsoons and the water cycles and the contamination of wells from arsenic that is naturally there in the soils, and the challenges for growing food to feed the people of India. So each region, like in Liberia, we had shamans who, there were five villages that were at war with one another over water. And through this book, we asked if they would, for publication, submit their water ceremonies that they shared in that region of the world, which had never been done.
Mm-hmm.
So the five shamans from the tribes gathered together with woman leaders, and they did a blood sacrifice of an animal and read the entrails to see if it was ordained for them to share with the world their water ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
And through the gathering of the shamans and the women of the five villages, it created a dialogue. First of all, they felt this was so extremely important, first of all, that they were being asked, and second of all, that this was a book that was global, and they were going to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it created a dialogue amongst them, so now they, in a peaceful fashion, are working together to share the limited amount of water that is there. So that was like a backstory that was unexpected that occurred through people participating in this book, and which is so beautiful. And, you know, again, there were many examples like that where lives were transformed through the participation and the process of submitting materials for this book.
What? Why do you think that water can have that kind of a power of transformation? I mean, I know that you have very deep-seated, I mean, you're a water philosopher, right? So you have a very deep-seated relationship with water. Why do you think it has this kind of power?
You know, innately, we all have that relationship with water. If you ever see, I mean, we're born in water. You ever see children around water, the excitement and how they love to play and shout and scream and laugh. It's like, you know, they intuitively know they're sharing time with a friend or someone they can trust or something that's sacred and special. And we know that it is a element that is life-giving. It's where our thoughts emanate from. It's the gives the birth to life. So I think just intuitively, innately, and through our journey in lives, depending on what our experiences are, the environments we've lived in, and our relationship with water in those different environments, whether you had water that was polluted or you know someone who comes from a region where people die from lack of water. We just, at this time in history, Juanita, are truly awakening more than ever before about how special water is, how important it is for us to alter our relationship and behavior patterns with water in order for civilization to survive. The chairman of the board of National Geographic, Gilbert M. Grosvenor, who has a letter in this book, and was the person that gave me the award that I received in Chicago at an international water conference, Groundwater Guardian Award from the Groundwater Foundation. And his comment when I spoke with him was that if we do not change our behavior patterns in our relationship with water in the next 10 years, that he foresees that there'll be a collapse of civilization.
Wow, that soon.
And he is a very, I mean, he has connections to scientists and world leaders around the globe
mm-hmm.
in his position. And I, too, was shocked. Yes, that soon. Not that we will wipe ourselves off the face of the earth, but that we will face extreme hardships,
mm-hmm.
Juanita.
Mm-hmm.
And with some intelligence, which we claim that we have, and still think that we have.
Right.
With all of our computers and abilities to go into outer space and our inventions, but yet the very basic element for our ongoing survival and health, water, is something we have yet to come to terms with our so-called intelligence on a massive scale around the globe where we work in harmony towards survival of our civilization, and water being that unifying element to bring us together to work toward a common purpose at this time.
So interesting. I mean, we are in such a profound time of change right now on our planet, and to consider that water will be a bridge is just, I mean, that's beautiful. So is this what you're considering, the water awakening?
Yes, and I you see it more in the news today with water. You see people starting to pay more for water, which is something that awakens up people immediately. Oh, God, my water bill's going sky high. It tripled in the past year. You know, that's an awakening unto itself.
Yeah.
Never mind what we read in the news or see on the news. But, yes, I see this water awakening. It's either, it happens through our readings and through our awareness, our consciousness, becoming more sensitive to our use of water and respecting water. Our will be imposed on us inevitably by the high prices of food because of the energy it takes to pump water or to transport water and to grow water. So inevitably, all of us are going to be touched by this water crisis in some fashion. And inevitably, all of us are going to awaken to water. It's inevitable in one fashion or another.
So from what I sort of hear you saying, and part of your message is that I guess maybe we don't need more laws regarding water protection, water conservation, but more so that we need actually to change our paradigm about water, and then our lifestyles will change because of that.
Yes, it naturally flows that governments are not going to enforce the laws to the extent that they should, but also for a change to occur quickly and to be effective, it has to be grassroots. It has to come from the masses of the people of the world. And again, it's just I have faith that this is something that will happen. And faith is the proper word, because not only is our health dependent on clean water, but also the foundations of all the religions of the world are founded upon their relationship with water. All the early holy sites and healing sites of the world, of course, were founded around either springs or confluences of rivers or special water features of the planet. And those were the healing and sacred centers of the earth from early humankind. And a lot of your centers, Jerusalem, and your cathedrals, et cetera, that we have today were built upon these holy sites. So we have, here we have religion with the common denominator that they all share of water. Health, the foundation of all of our health is dependent on water. Our food and our economies are all founded upon our relationship with water. So it's all, the confluence of all these things is coming together at this time on the earth.
Yes, yeah. Do you think, William, that it's part of our own disconnect as a human species with ourselves that's actually just reflected in our disconnect with our relationship with water?
Well, to a degree, we're all connected with ourselves, but the disconnect has been from our relationship with the living world and with responsibility toward water, which is the provider to the living world and the creator of the living world. And my sincere feeling is we've learned a lot about water. We are still learning a lot about water. Water is a mysterious substance. There's no physicist, scientist, chemist, biologist on the face of the earth who can define the structure of water.
Yeah.
It is still a mystery to humankind. It's an anomalous element. And because of that, it has this powerful creative force to be able to create life. And so it only begs of us to awaken to this powerful force and to understand it and to work with water in a very intelligent and the best way we possibly can at this time in history to bring some stability to the stresses and challenges that humankind as a civilization is facing now, and to basically ensure that there will be no collapse at this time. I have faith that we can do that. That's why I've dedicated my life to water for over 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I see so many affirmations right now, Juanita, that is occurring. I mean, sometimes I feel like giving hope, and others that I know who do this work, but there are so many affirmations. And
what are you seeing, William, that is affirming that for you?
We're seeing the religious leaders now speaking to their congregations relative to working with water and following their holy scriptures and their ceremonies with water. So we have basic, and we see where religious leaders are working together around the elements of water through their congregations. So to me, that is extremely powerful because we know this earth at this time in history through wars is being torn apart by the differences, perceived differences of religious belief systems.